This is a podcast from BFM 89.9, the business station.
Hello and welcome to Health and Living with me, Lim Soo. And now, when was the last time you slept so well that you felt entirely refreshed and ready for the day ahead? Or maybe how often do you find yourself waking on the quote-unquote wrong side of the bed? Now, sleep and mental health are closely interlinked. Poor sleep can negatively impact your mental health, and the other way around as well. Some mental health disorders can also affect your sleep. But just exactly how does this relationship work? And is it important that all of us make sure we get good quality and quantity of sleep? So on this episode of Mind Matters, consultant psychiatrist Dr. Ravi Varma Rao Paneerselvam joins me to dive into this relationship between sleep and our mental health and how we can hopefully, you know, for those of us who do that, stop sleep procrastination. Dr. Ravi, thank you so much for joining me today.
Hello, and thank you for having me.
What happens, Dr. Ravi, you know, to the body and in the brain when we sleep?
All right. Sleep is essential. It's essential for normal functioning and health. Throughout time, and we've always been told that you need to have a good night's sleep. It has been so much a part and parcel of the human existence. Mm-hmm. It is important for sleep to happen so that you can have good brain development. You can have good brain function, especially the parts of your brain where your memory is stored, how you sense time, how you plan, your judgment, that's very much there. If you don't have enough sleep, your reflexes become dull. And that's something that we might have experienced once in a while when we don't get enough sleep. You don't seem to be able to drive well. And that's sometimes the unfortunate reason people end up in accidents. Mm-hmm. But beyond that, what does sleep do? Sleep also helps with a lot of other things. A lot of restorative functions actually happen when you are sleeping. Example, there is a lot of repair work going on. Skin and tissue repair, the growth hormone is released, the general and well-functioning of the nervous system actually happens during sleep. So it's sort of like the place where it's sort of like the space that the body gets to do a little bit of reset. Sometimes people say that, oh, when you are sleeping, you don't actually burn that much energy. And mm-hmm. that's actually not true. You do burn energy, but the metabolic processes are still going on, maybe just slightly lesser. It's not that much, only about 5 or 10% less, because what happens is everything else that doesn't happen so much during the waking period happens during sleep.
So we always hear, Dr. Ravi, that we must get, you know, a certain number of hours of sleep, right? People say the ideal number is 7 to 8 hours, but how much does the quality of sleep also matter?
Right. That's a very good question. We like numbers. We like numbers everywhere. Numbers mm-hmm. are easy points for us to follow. They're easy boundaries for us to follow. Okay. Children, babies, they sleep a lot more. Mm-hmm. They mostly spend their day sleeping. They sleep, they wake up, they sleep, they wake up. In fact, you notice that babies, they actually do sleep and wake up a few times in a day. But as opposed to adults, we only sleep once a day. Mm-hmm. And then when you get older, you have lesser hours of sleep. So it's important to know that the quantity of sleep required on average changes across a person's lifetime. Mm-hmm. How frequent someone falls asleep changes as well. Most of us adults, we sleep once a day, maybe with a little nap. But it's very different to be when you look at babies or at much older people. But what is also important and even more important to say that is the quality of sleep. Because when you sleep, you would need to maintain a good quality in sense that your sleep is uninterrupted. Mm-hmm. Your sleep goes into all the stages of sleep. Sleep is not just you close your eyes and you wake up and everything happens. The brain actually goes into a progressively different state. You have this non-rapid eye movement sleep, rapid eye movement sleep. Within these sleep phases, there's the deep sleep phase, and then there's the part of the phase where you actually dream. So in order for that to happen, you had to have good quality. Good quality sleep is sleep wherein when you lie down on bed, your sleep latency, or the time that you take to fall asleep is fairly short, 30 minutes or less. You sleep through the night, you don't wake up. Mm-hmm. If you wake up only once, if you do get up, you go back to sleep quickly, and you are able to maintain the hours that you need for your age group. And when you wake up, and this is the most important thing that, you know, I think people can tell, is that you feel rested, you feel energized, you feel restored. You don't wake up feeling tired. That's actually a clear, or what I would say, a key indicator where the sleep quality was poor. And sometimes there are many reasons that happens, actually. It may not be just related to the brain, but sometimes it's also related to our breathing apparatus. Some people cannot breathe very well when they sleep, especially those who suffer from sleep apnea. So they end up, when they're sleeping, they end up gasping, choking, and snoring. And then they do get up and go back to sleep. They might not even realize the fact that they get up and go back to sleep. So, and that really affects the sleep quality and, on the long run, health, physical health as well.
So when someone doesn't have good quality and quantity of sleep, right? You alluded to some of the impact that it has earlier on people's behaviors, things like your judgment and your reflexes. But could you elaborate more, Dr. Ravi? How does it impact someone's behavior and mood when they don't get enough sleep?
The relationship between a person's mood, or if I can expand, mental health, to sleep is quite bidirectional. There are reasons when your mental health is not so great that your sleep gets affected. You have, when you're stressed, when you're anxious, you're worried, you can't fall asleep. And then that makes you feel very tired and your reflexes become dull, and that makes you not function so well when you get up, or, well, when you try to resume or handle that stress. So that sort of begins a vicious cycle. Besides that, what happens is when you do not have enough sleep, your ability to perform or your mental agility does reduce. It's almost equivalent of to the reflexes of a person who's getting drunk. So that's how bad things can go when you don't have enough sleep. So that means you might be taking a longer time to make a decision. You might be more callous when you're making a decision. You might overlook things. You might accidentally fall asleep while doing an important task, or doing a task that is rather mundane. We have to acknowledge sometimes we do get very sleepy when we're driving, and that sometimes even happens during the daytime, and you go into patterns of microsleep, etc. So those things are quite of the immediate side effects. But if you don't get enough sleep, you start getting worried why you don't get enough sleep. And that can lead to the formation of anxiety disorders. And with anxiety disorders, puts you at risk for depressive disorders. And in the long run, it also affects your physical health, obesity, heart disease, type 2 diabetes mellitus. This is also associated with poor sleep.
What determines if someone, you know, develops, what determines the likelihood of someone developing more severe mental health problems due to poor sleep? Because, I mean, we've all had those moments, right, where we worry when we don't sleep well, you know, and why can't I sleep well? But why do some people, why are some people more prone for that to escalate?
This is a question that we have to be a bit careful. Does lack of sleep predispose severe mental illnesses? When we're talking about severe mental illnesses, we're talking about bipolar disorder, schizophrenia. These are conditions that are, when they're really bad or when they're really acute, they can be very disruptive to a person's life. That is in a different way, where the risk actually escalates. It's not to say people who are depressed or anxious are less important. Not that way. But this thing can become high risk states. What we have found is that in certain conditions like schizophrenia, the sleep architecture itself is disturbed. Wherein, when they do sleep study and sleep patterns, when they experience sleep, it is quite disordered as well. So one wonders whether the disorder actually leads to sleep problems. That could be one of the things. And that's often the earlier signs that we catch when people actually have difficulty in falling asleep. And there are many reasons why people can't fall asleep when you have severe mental illnesses. If you have a psychotic illness, you could be actually experiencing psychotic symptoms like voices talking to you that nobody else can hear, thoughts being disjointed, feeling very paranoid that someone could come to get you. Or if you're having a manic state in bipolar disorder, you could be having a lot of racing thoughts, which actually keep you away from sleep. And in bipolar disorder, the hallmark is, in mania, is the reduced need for sleep. You don't need to sleep that much. So rather than, I would say, rather than this causing sleep problems, these severe mental illnesses, their key feature is sleep disruption. So they actually, they're quite associated with sleep disordered sleeping patterns.
Mm. So it's hard to say then, right, Dr. Ravi, which causes which, you know, the sleep problems came first or the mental health problems came first in more severe cases.
Yeah, when we're looking at certain illnesses. But if, let's say, you have poor sleeping habits, mm-hmm. that could actually predispose you mm-hmm. to having anxiety and depressive disorders. And there are some states or mental states wherein when your sleep is actually poor, you are at higher risk of, in young people, where poor sleep is sometimes associated with increased suicidal behavior. So you've got to see that it also works that way too. It mm-hmm. can, you can have a disorder and you can have very high risk states within disorders or even out of the disorder. But especially within the disorder, when someone is not sleeping well and maybe when they're depressed and especially during the time that their sleep is very much affected, they are very much at risk as well. So that's also another association that I like to highlight here. It's not just this caused that. It's quite a 3D and they all affect each other.
Mm, all right. We'll go for a quick break now, Dr. Ravi, and continue this discussion when we come back. On the show with me today is consultant psychiatrist Dr. Ravi Varma Rao Paneerselvam on this episode of Mind Matters, talking about the relationship between sleep and our mental health. Don't go anywhere. We'll be right back on Health and Living, BFM 89.9. Welcome back to Health and Living with me, Lim Su, and you are listening to another episode of our Mind Matters series where we explore mental health issues. And on this episode, we are looking at the close interlink, interplay between mental health and our sleep. Joining me to share more about this and how we can recognize when things are getting bad and how we can do better to improve our sleep patterns is consultant psychiatrist Dr. Ravi Varma Rao Paneerselvam. Dr. Ravi, before you were talking about how, you know, it's important to, I guess, understand this relationship and understand how not everyone sort of falls into that pattern where it escalates into something bad, right? But how do I recognize when, say, for listeners, right, in that situation where I think I'm getting very poor sleep, how do I recognize when it's affecting me bad enough when it's bad enough that it's also affecting, you know, my mental health and my physical health and that I need to seek professional help?
Right. I think the fact that when one starts pondering whether they have enough sleep, that itself is probably a very good start point. Mm. You don't feel good. You feel very stressed out. You feel exhausted. You also might feel irritable, angrier than usual. And then you also get into bad habits, like, you know, when you feel so tired, you can't be doing things. So you end up eating more than you're supposed to be eating, binging. Then you might be actually trying to take stimulants to stay awake or do something. Example, taking coffee, excessive coffee, actually, or caffeine. Then you do see the effects when you don't sleep so well. Your skin, especially under the eyes, and then your skin also starts to break out. These are some physical signs that you see when people don't sleep so well. However, if you want to really look at sleep patterns itself, the fact that if you keep tossing and turning in your bed without getting into sleep, like you can actually remember lying awake in your bed like more than 30 minutes, you keep waking up at night. You wake up earlier than you're supposed to. These are quite important signs. Or something more sinister, especially if you have conditions that could be, and I'm not saying this has to be, this could be, in as I mentioned earlier, sometimes people have reduced need for sleep. And it's important not to see these symptoms as just in isolation. If you have reduced need to sleep, increased energy levels, your self-esteem has suddenly becomes inflated and you suddenly start taking more risks than usual, spending more, being more riskier, just generally being more riskier, that is a important sign to actually go and seek help immediately. That could be signs of hypomania or a manic episode in the development. These are some of the earliest signs. And sleep difficulties or sleep symptoms, we would say, are often the start point of many psychiatric illnesses. And often it takes quite a while for them to resolve. So they are a key hallmark. Mm. When you see that these things are happening, it's not just, okay, my sleep is not so good. It's also a point to think about, like, what else could be going wrong? Sometimes you could not be sleeping so well because you may have trouble breathing at night. That could be that, especially obstructive sleep apnea. That can happen when someone has a comorbid obesity. That, besides that, sometimes when you have heart diseases, you have hard time falling asleep. Sometimes you have thyroid disorders, hyperthyroidism. That's when also sleep is difficult, but then you also get palpitations, you end up losing a lot of weight, with other symptoms that are associated with it. So when you see sleep, you also want to keep an eye on what else is happening when my sleep is not so good. So if, and then if, let's say, you're not sleeping well, it's always good to just consult a doctor, and they can work it up from there.
How does hustle culture also impact people's sleep patterns? Because these days we see everyone, we see a lot of people doing that, right? People think that, okay, they don't need to survive on that much sleep. You know, 4 or 5 hours a day sometimes is enough. Yeah. The priority is work. Sometimes out of necessity due to financial, for financial reasons, right? But how does that also impact someone's sleep and thus, you know, that all those knock-on effects?
Yeah. When you were asking that question, this phrase comes to my in my mind. It's really, I'll sleep when I'm dead, kind of thing. And that could be actually quite a dangerous prophecy that we could be heading to. We know a lot of people among our peers or people that we know in our lives that they do work really long hours. You know, there's a prescribed working hour, and that's the time they actually get back home. And then when they get back home, chores are waiting for them to do. The things that you need to settle at home as well. Your clothes don't wash themselves. Your food doesn't get onto the table by itself. All of that. So you do realize that, you know, it's not just the fact that they, and not everybody can afford to just go home, go to a laundry service, or can buy food outside. It's sometimes not just, it's not sustainable. So that, there's also that whole spillover of hustle culture, actually. And people tend to think that, you know, they want to get everything done or they want to do more. But what people don't realize, and I think we are all guilty of that, we don't know what's our limit. In fact, it's very hard for us to know. At some level, we have to realize we're all finite. We cannot do everything. We cannot be doing everything. And sometimes we get tasks at work or tasks at home where sometimes the person who assigns the task or how that task gets assigned and how you interpret and do it may not match, or the fact that person wants to see how far you can go and you really stretch and you keep on doing it. And sometimes that is the only way to survive. It becomes sometimes the only way to survive. But if that keeps happening and things don't get better, I'm not going to say that's right or wrong, because everybody has a different set of problems. It's very easy for me to come and say, or anybody to come and say, oh, you know, you need to have good work-life balance. You need to be out of office 5:01 p.m. And you forget everything about work. It doesn't work that way. Real life doesn't work that way. We know about that. Sometimes there's certain priorities that get up, sometimes it gets down, and you have, if you have very rigid boundaries, it also doesn't work so well. And it frankly also becomes very unhealthy as well when you have such ways of working. But what on the other hand happens is when you don't have clear boundaries at all, you just end up working or you end up doing something and you don't look after yourself, that's when problems start. That's the start of the problem. And one thing people don't realize is that in our hierarchy of needs, if you look at Abraham Maslow's hierarchy of needs, sleep is at the base. And everything else you want to achieve, you should have the base strong and steady. The foundation needs to be steady before anything else happens. If not, you're not going to go so far with that as well. What's going to happen if you keep hustling? You're going to get burned out. You might leave the job. You might not be able to complete the task. You might make a very callous and grave error. You could actually get involved in an accident. You could actually, you know, carelessly not turn off the stove. The house could catch a fire. All those kind of things can happen. So that's where you are setting yourself to if you're stuck within that hustle culture, this thing. And one more thing is, if you hustle and you sort of feed into that work culture where you think everybody's expected to hustle and that is the only expected behavior, then what happens is that you also contribute to the toxic working environment.
Mm-hmm.
Something many people don't realize that they themselves, you know, it's easy to blame the boss. It's easy to blame the system. But when you don't say anything about the system and you become participant to that system and you think, that's when it gets worse. And it also affects you. And when you are affected, when you're not your well self, you will not be able to perform. So what you're working for, it becomes very counterproductive. And then when burnout comes in, you develop a distance between your task and you start developing negative feelings.
Mm-hmm.
And that just affects productivity and just does not lead to a good outcome.
Mm. So then zooming into people with mental health disorders, your patients, you know, people you see in clinic, Dr. Ravi, how important is managing sleep for their overall management of their mental health problem?
All right. That's a very good question. Sometimes many patients come to us and they would say, if you ask them what would be the one thing that they would like to see resolved first or one thing they would like to see solved, many a time people mention it's sleep. Because that's so important. It's a very essential part of your day-to-day existence.
Mm.
In fact, we mark our days with sleep being the end or the beginning. You know, you end your day with sleep. Mm-hmm. Many of that gets disrupted. How disorganized life could get.
Mm-hmm.
So that's one of those things. So patients do find it as a very important symptom target. Not all patients with mental health disorders have sleep problems. Mm-hmm. Some do, some don't. And for some people, sleep is not a key priority. But for a good number, it is. So what we would actually do is that we would address the concept of sleep hygiene. Because besides mental health conditions, besides external factors, there are some things that are very much within our control, which we sometimes don't actually realize.
Mm-hmm.
And we allow ourselves to get into a series of bad habits.
Mm-hmm.
So that actually can hinder sleep. So you can do some simple steps to make sure that your sleep, make sure sleep happens. And sleep is not just it. You go into sleep, you stay asleep, and you get and you have enough sleep, right? So it's because sometimes people say, oh, if I just get a 10 minute sleep, I'll be okay. But it's not enough. 10 minutes would not be enough for you to go into deep sleep or all the phases. Mm-hmm. So it's not just important to initiate sleep, but it's also important to sustain sleep. So habits, sleep hygiene, that's one thing that we do quite often. Some patients also may require medications that can help with sleep. And I'm going to be very careful with this because it is a fairly common approach because we like to restore sleep fast. And medication does help to restore sleep fast. And that's very important. That, however, it is also important that we do not self-medicate ourselves. We do not get addicted to sleeping pills. And that's a very loose term. What are sleeping pills? Are all medications or all psychiatric medications sleeping pills or addictive sleeping pills? No and no. There are some groups of medications that people could get dependent on, meaning that once you start, you sort of develop a habit, the brain develops a habit, and you get addicted to them. It's a simple way to understand that. These are benzodiazepine group of drugs and some Z drugs as well. Their habit forming is less. But what we need to be quite careful of is when do they become like that? When they are prescribed for very long terms without indication. We do use them very often. So I hope people don't go from these interviews and saying no to benzodiazepine medication. That's not correct. There is a clear use of such medication, especially to calm someone at a moment when they're very anxious or to actually initiate sleep or to provide a sustained sleep duration for a limited number of time, a few weeks or sometimes a few months as well.
Mm-hmm.
And good prescribers normally will take them out when their use and function is not there. But what happens when you get dependent on them is that they actually don't help with sleep. But if you don't have them, you can't even go to sleep and your requirement for them goes more and more and you sort of see the addiction pattern falling in there. But there are also other medications. Just putting that's one group. There are certain medications for certain disorders that also help with regulation of sleep. There are some antidepressants that work specifically on sleep. There are some antidepressant, antipsychotic medications that also affect the receptors that promote sleep. So that too is there. And now in the market, there are also newer molecules available to help in initiating sleep. Example, orexin antagonists. These are new things in the market. These things are there. Then there are also antidepressants that work where the melatonin receptor sort of like similar structure to the melatonin receptor to also help with sleep initiation. So there are newer products as well. This, the whole medication and the whole science of sleep pharmacology is a very big one. So I just give a little snapshot on that. So medications is also one part of it, but it's very important to have good sleep hygiene. It doesn't make sense if you end up taking stimulants, coffee, or getting yourself really worked up, expecting a medication to help you to put you to sleep, to help you to go to sleep. No. Yeah? So it's not going to work that way. So you've got to do things that you can control within your sleep environment and also some habits as well. We do pick up a lot of bad habits in our day-to-day life, eating very heavy meals at night, and then you get reflux and you just get up, that kind of thing. So you see, those things are very preventable. You got to have a good space, a good few hours after your meal. You got to, for some people, not all, monitor your caffeine intake. And sometimes you also want to look at the environment. If you are sleeping in an area where it's so noisy, you can't fall asleep. If you're sleeping next to someone who is noisy, you can't fall asleep. And sometimes people struggle with that, actually, because they feel, I cannot actually do that because I might hurt their feelings or this is not culturally appropriate to do. But probably that person is also not having good quality sleep. If you are making that much noise when you're sleeping, not really well. So that too. And also the fact that people don't give themselves permission to get good sleep. They don't have a good bed. They don't have a quiet environment. All those things. These are simple steps that we can actually advise patients as well. Or anybody.
All right, we do have to go for another quick break. On the show with me today is consultant psychiatrist Dr. Ravi Varma Rao Paneerselvam for this episode of Mind Matters. Keep it here on Health and Living, BFM 89.9. Welcome back to Health and Living with me, Lim Su, and you're listening to an episode of our Mind Matters series. And today we are talking about the link, the interplay between sleep and our mental health, how each of those can affect each other and thus impact our physical health, our well-being in the long run too. So joining me to share more about this is consultant psychiatrist Dr. Ravi Varma Rao Paneerselvam. Dr. Ravi, before the break, we were talking about the importance of good sleep hygiene, things that are, you know, common sense, but do you find it challenging to drive home that message to people, to patients? Because clearly, I'm speaking from my own experience, right? Again, these things are common sense. They are perfectly logical. And yet, it can be very difficult to have that self-discipline.
Yeah, it is. It is because there's so many things in day-to-day life that actually prevent us from getting in a good sleep hygiene. Example, meal time. Sometimes you just cannot help it, but you only have your meal very late in the day. Then, or sometimes you just cannot help it that you only have that space to sleep and there's no other space. You can't help it that there's construction going on next door, you know, when you are trying to get sleep, especially for shift workers. So those are things, you know, you can't really avoid it, but you've got to look within your space what you can control and what you can manage and what you can manage easily. And sometimes when sleep gets really affected and then you realize, this is a problem, I can do A, B, C, D, E, F, G, but maybe I can do only one or two things consistently and that could be enough. But a lot of people, are looking for quick and fast fix. So, I mean, we all look for it. But I think it's important to know that those fixes, while they may help, especially in the immediate stage, but what's really more important is that you got to work with the underlying issues or the other things that you can control. Sometimes when people are presenting to us in a very acute state, yes, we do recommend medication to help with sleep. We do. But that's with all of these other measures as well.
So then in cases where there is a very clear interlink between lack of sleep and behavioral changes or even mental health problems, right? How much does improving sleep lead to improvement on the mental health aspect? What have you seen, Dr. Ravi?
It really does a lot. People feel very reassured when sleep starts to be restored. Mm. People feel that it is working. And we got to see that when people come with mental health conditions or diagnosable psychiatric illness, example, depression with sleep problems.
Mm-hmm.
Okay? They have started coming for therapy. They have also maybe taking an antidepressant and they see that, hey, my sleep is improving. I think this is working. They can engage better. They can make changes. So what actually sleep restoration helps is that it actually gives you a lot of empowerment to do a lot of things. So it is, rather than putting a number to it, I would rather say it is very, very empowering. It gives you it's not just additive, it just builds on. It becomes very synergistic to recovery.
Mm. Knowing all that then, Dr. Ravi, you know, is having, you know, robust data and numbers and research on the link between sleep and mental health, is that going to be helpful at the policymaking level in terms of what we can do to change the environment to make sure that people, that Malaysians actually have better sleep?
I guess, yes. But when we want to look at it, you got to really see how you make those decisions.
Mm-hmm.
One of those things that we would like to think about is sound pollution, which often affects people who live in big cities.
Mm-hmm.
There are people who live in places that are never quiet. Those places never are quiet. And then sometimes people learn to sleep in those situations, but sometimes people can't.
Mm-hmm.
Especially when you are facing an additional challenge that thing that you could maybe make yourself fall asleep might not work, all right? So we probably need to have policies wherein we look at it at different levels. One of the things that you want to look at is policies that gear towards healthy societies. Example, where you actually think about making sure that after certain hours, things are quiet. You know, sometimes, you know, you used to wonder when you go into certain Airbnbs or certain hotels, they give you like after 10 is quiet hours, because it's really important that someone's sleep shouldn't be disrupted by your activity as well. And then, of course, that itself will then build into building how you do buildings, how you structure buildings, how you ventilate buildings. Because sometimes when the room is too hot, not everybody can afford air conditioning. And when you really turn up I don't know whether you call it turn up the aircon, but you really keep at lower temperatures,
mm-hmm.
going to actually use a lot of electricity, and that is going to cost a lot. So you've got to also look at policies where you look at, these are overarching policies as well. Handling climate change, handling buildings that are sustainable, handling buildings, making buildings with better ventilation. Those things, you know, those structural things, those things can do a lot for good sleep practices. Another bit is, of course, talking how important sleep is and making people aware of it. And you do that by telling young people about sleep. You know, these are things that you would like to start talking about good sleep practices when people are just entering kindergarten.
That early.
Yeah, that early. I think good sleep practices start very young. Often our bad practices are things that we pick up one after the other, and then they accumulate actually. And young people model older people on sleep hours as well. So those are things. But I'm going to just say, just because you don't sleep well when you're young, doesn't mean you will be bad forever. No, a lot of people have the capacity to restore their sleep patterns as well. So you would like to talk about importance of sleep, and then you don't need to just do one module for sleep or one something for sleep. So about healthy lifestyle options, sleep is a part of a healthy lifestyle. Sleep is essential. Good nutrition is essential. Exercise is essential. Safe and effective communication is essential. Boundaries are essential. All of those things are part of healthy lifestyle options that, you know, sometimes if you start talking about it and that becomes a part of culture, then you realize, oh, everybody does that. You see, why are there societies and in some parts of the world where recycling is not an exception? Mm. It is just the norm.
Mm.
You just have to recycle. And why do some places people frequently use bicycles instead of using other modes of transport? Because it's either incentivized or it's actually the cheaper option and it's encouraged. It doesn't look odd when a professional goes to work on a bike.
Mm-hmm.
It doesn't look odd, but it might look odd in this part of the world. Just putting that thought there. So these things are part where you actually build in healthy cultures as well. So you also talk about healthy sleep environments. You also talk about workplace policies where people are not expected to work so late. You see, you can't actually expect people to get enough sleep when you give them so much work. And mm-hmm. then how do you expect them to do everything else? You know, you can't, oh, that one, they have to sort it out themselves. Your matter, you sort it out. Your business, I'm not going to interfere how you live your life. The thing is, those things, if you don't have enough time, you can't do them. You know, you can't, you see. So you have to be cognizant when you set tasks as well. And then that also comes in when you talk about employment policies. Mm. Sometimes companies don't want to hire more than one or two people, just put one person. You know, when people's sleep get affected, they're the only person that can do that job or is hired to do that job. So they don't have sick days, so they work through illness. And that's something, working through illness is something that we should, but these are things that you should actually not even allow anymore. These mm-hmm. are illegal. I wouldn't want to go as far as the word illegal, but they shouldn't be, you know, if you're sick, why are you at work? You should be getting better. You are not going to be as productive. You could be spreading germs to your colleagues and all of that. But you see, that those things sometimes are prized in certain organizations.
Mm-hmm.
So those kind of habits need to be weeded out. So the another thing is working late should not be valued that much. You know, if people are working late, something is either wrong with the task, it's just far too much for someone to cope, or maybe the person is struggling with that and there must be more assistance to be given to that person. So those are sort of employment structures that you can build in. So you put in all these small things, you look at policy as well. And then probably when you have such structures and people don't have sleep problems that much, you also realize that the clinical load, or the way you call it, where people end up in illnesses, that load reduces a lot. And that's the, and or even if they fall sick, they actually do get better faster too. Unhealthy practices as well also affect sleep. Drug use especially affects sleep. One of the other things is, of course, I'm not too sure how common it is that it doesn't make sense we have a lot of activities when people are supposed to be sleeping. Example, you have loads of movies at 2 a.m., 12 a.m. I wonder whether those things may matter. But of course, once in a while, anything is good.
Mm.
Anything in moderation is okay. But if you put in and if you start pushing business hours to be really late, that actually also sort of indirectly enables this culture. Oh, people are all hustling, so let's keep our shops open this longer.
Mm.
So you cash into that.
Yep.
Then you suddenly realize that also sort of encourages people to sleep late and this thing. So you got to realize that too. These are very indirect and sinister enablers in society.
Mm, but they're just as important to recognize. To round up this discussion then, Dr. Ravi, you know, what final message would you have to our listeners when it comes to their own sleep and their own mental health?
We all have different sleep needs. Some people need to sleep more. Some people need to sleep less in quantity. But whatever it is, you should get up from sleep feeling refreshed. You should not be doing something that sacrifices your sleep and makes you feel terrible about it. So I guess that's important. You got to know what... And sleep is a very basic need. So I think we got to realize that it is the basic need. With that, you can achieve everything else. Anyway, it's a stepping stone to achieving everything else. If you don't eat, don't sleep, I'm at risk of sounding like one of those standard advices that you used to get when you were young.
Mm-hmm.
You're like, oh, you give small kids, sleep, eat, but those things are very essential things. So it is essential. So I think we need to start recognizing it. And if you have any difficulties or you feel that your sleep is not so what you want it to be, get some help. And there's a lot of help available.
All right. Thank you so much for joining me today, Dr. Ravi. I've been speaking to consultant psychiatrist Dr. Ravi Varma Rao Pandurselvam for this episode of Mind Matters. I'm Lim Suan, and this has been Health and Living, BFM 89.9.
You have been listening to a podcast from BFM 89.9, the business station. For more stories of the same kind, download the BFM app.